Welcome to Under the Shell, presented by Terrapin Sports Central. This week, we welcome on our second ever in-studio guest, Ty Hepting, manager for the men's basketball team.
Ty, appreciate you coming on.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Friend of the pod now, Ty. Obviously, this is a cool episode, B, so get us started.
Yeah, let's get into it. Ty, just kind of walk us through, obviously, your manager here at Maryland now, but what's your basketball story? How did you get into basketball?
So my dad and his two brothers played basketball their whole life, so I was always kind of playing from a young age. Played all young age, and then freshman year, played for my freshman team. I went to Loyola Blakefield in Baltimore. Sophomore year, took a year off to focus on volleyball, but then came back and played again my junior and senior year at Loyola.
What made you come back?
I had decided I didn't want to play in college. I wanted to focus more on volleyball, and it became less of a job and more of just like something fun I can do. I always like to have something to do, so having something in the winter was fun.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. The question I would ask for you is, what made you want to get into coaching? Like, was it because when you stopped playing, you're like, well, I want to stay in basketball? Or had you always kind of had the idea of like becoming a coach when you got older?
So I've always had the idea of like coaching my kids. I've always wanted to be involved with basketball, but I always thought it'd be have a job and then help out with my kids or help out at like a local school or something. But when I quit basketball, I thought I'd kind of lose connection to basketball entirely, but I stayed really into college basketball, really into the NBA, and more than just watching the games, but sitting down and like analyzing and understanding why people are doing certain things. Right. And then my junior and senior year, when we do film for basketball, I didn't play much for my team. I wasn't very good. I was a bench motivator, I always said, but I was always
averaged a bunch of
a lot of claps.
Claps per game.
I was always really into the film part of it. Like, I'd point out things to our coach, and he'd always like, that's what he said, like at our banquet, was I've never had a player more into film for not being as involved with the playing aspect of the game.
So did you know you wanted to be a manager when you stepped on campus, or did you know even before then? What was that process like?
So I knew I wanted to be involved with the basketball team. I'm a journalism major too, and I thought it the best way might be just like covering basketball or like writing, like tweeting about it, something like that, writing a blog. And then I met a guy where I worked that knew people involved with the basketball program and said he could help set something up that I could be involved with the team, which was the perfect scenario for me.
So then how did that process start? How was there an application that you had to fill out? Like, did you have interviews? How did you become the manager at Maryland?
So I'm a special case. For most people, there's it's actually the application period right now. So if you find the Maryland men's basketball Twitter, follow the link in the email, send in your application if you're interested. But for me, I was working as a bar back at a country club, and one of the guys sitting at the bar was really into a Warriors playoff game, and I just talked to him for like 30 minutes about Steph Curry. And then eventually he came back, and I kept talking to him. We could like created like kind of a bond, and I told him I was interested in working with the Maryland team. He was he worked at Under Armour with Jimmy Patsos.
Really?
So he gave me Patsos' number. I texted him. He set up a lunch for me to meet these guys at dinner, which happened to be the director of basketball athletics, Greg Manning, and assistant coach Tony Skin, who just left to co-coach at George Mason. But I talked to them. They set everything up for me. I came to a team camp over the summer that was considered like a tryout just to make sure I had the right mentality. But once I showed up and like showed I wanted to work, they were like, all right, you're in.
That's awesome. Mike actually has a very unique connection to Jimmy Patsos, who might be a future guest on the pod. Invitation's been extended, and he is waiting for the time to come on.
So if you're listening to this, no.
No, he's on. He's ready to come on. We just got to find a date.
And he said he wants to go to Bentley's with us, too, and take shots for every question. So
he's definitely an interesting character.
Yeah, but that's kind of what I wanted to ask you about characters. You know, like, they're obviously – I'm sure when you first started, it was harder to kind of build those relationships with the guys just because, you know, they're new, you're new, that type of thing. But when did you start to really get to know the guys on the team, and what was that relationship like where you're still kind of not serving them, but like you're helping them out rather than necessarily them helping you, but you still have that relationship between?
Yeah, so it started a little awkward, not just for me, like as a new guy, but for everyone, because it's a whole new coaching staff, almost a whole new team. Like, a lot of the previous managers hadn't had any interactions with a lot of the players that were coming in. Like, there was the Dantes and the Hakeems that were coming back, but then there were a lot of new freshmen and a lot of transfers that Willard brought in. So it was kind of an awkward period over the summer where we knew everybody, but we weren't really connected. But then once you get into the season, like, it's just a completely different environment. It's just a great connection with all the guys. They're all so appreciatory of everything we do. That's not a word, but appreciative of everything we do. And then like you'll see them out on campus. They'll come over. They'll say what's up. Like it's just it's like connection as like a teammate, even though it's a little bit different with power dynamic and stuff.
Right. Yeah, that's super interesting.
Yeah. So you talked about some of the relationships. Kind of what's the day to day? What are some of your like key responsibilities and what's your main role? I guess
Every day, set up and clean up. So you get there an hour, sometimes an hour 15, hour 20, depending on what the schedule for the day is. Before, set everything up with whether that's getting the balls out, filling Gatorade coolers, making sure the floor is clean, all that. And then during practice, depending on your how experienced you are in basketball and how old you are and connected with the coaches you are, you may be just rebounding, you may just be passing bottles out, you may be like involved in some of the drills. It just depends on who you are and what the day is. Like sometimes one kid will have class, so I'll have to hop into a drill I've never been in before, but it's always kind of just staying on your toes, ready for anything. And then practice is over. Some of the guys will get extra shots up, rebound, like help run them through a little workout if they want to. And then once they're in the locker room, there's food for them every day. So they'll eat, then we'll eat, we'll hang out for a little bit. And then the new guys have what we do is called late, is just cleaning up everything. So getting everything off the floor, vacuuming the locker room, picking up any trash, throwing the food away, restocking the fridges. So that's the main practice itinerary, I guess.
You said you do drills in practice. You'd be putting up shots in practice with the boys.
So being in a drill is usually like, I always work with the big guys. Like I always purposely put myself on that side because that's when I played. I was a center. So it's just
point
like,
guard, though. Point guard at heart.
Yeah,
or?
At
okay,
heart.
There
yeah.
you go.
If I was allowed to, I would have brought the ball. It's just like coming off a screen and hitting them with like a little pass so that they can like do a move or like do a hook shot. And then occasionally they'll have rebounding drills. So yeah, you get to put up a few shots every once in a while. But
talk to me about our big man coach that just left. What was his personality like? He always seemed like he'd fire the team up. Like a very energetic guy from what it looked like.
I've never met someone like him. He's the nicest guy in the world, like cares so much about everybody. And no one's had the ability to fire a team up like him in my experience. There'll be a few times in practice a guy will dive on a loose ball and he'll run and he'll actually pick him up, like put him over his shoulder, run around with him, stuff like that. So he was definitely a really great guy, and I'm glad to see him move up in the coaching to get a job at NJIT.
Yeah, that's sweet. What is like – take us through – we always love to ask our guests like stories and things that they – and some of the stuff we learn is hilarious. But what's like your best or funniest story from like a practice you attended with like an interaction or something that happened? Like we just want to like hear whatever it is, you know – what that interaction was like and take us through that.
So I have a couple things come to mind. One is involved with a game after we beat Purdue. That was That was one of the craziest games. I was working the mop. And if you probably saw it on Twitter, when Kansas State beat Kansas at Kansas State, when they rushed the floor, the mop guy
wearing
the green shirt,
ran out and had to get the ball.
It was his job. Don't let anyone steal the ball. So I knew I was working the mop like a week before the game, and I was like, do I have to do this? And no one would answer, like, do I have to get the ball? And then like an hour before tip-off, they're like, all right, like we already know if we win, they're rushing, like you got to get the ball. And the other manager on the other side was like, had just sprained his ankle
in a basketball
game. So no matter where the ball was on any side of the floor, I had to go get it. So I'm sitting there and there's like 25 seconds left. It's counting down and we're just dribbling the ball, it out.
You're hoping
so,
they don't throw it up in the air, know what I mean?
So I'm like, all right, it's on the other side, though. So I'm like, all right, they're just going to dribble it out like it's going to be the game. I'm going to walk over there. So I walked up the sideline and was standing like next to the ref after we got a shot clock violation. And they inbound it to, I think it was Morton on Purdue, and he starts walking away from me. And I'm in my head, I'm like, I can't go up to this Purdue player and like rip the ball out of his hand. Like,
he's gonna like punch
you. Yeah.
Like,
he's mad they just lost. It's like the third game in a row that they've
lost.
They got
Corey Storm.
He's a guy in a green Maryland shirt.
Yeah. So I started to like slowly trot behind him, and then he hands the ball to Willard. And I'm like not supposed to interact with Willard on game days, like try to stay out of his way, let him do his thing. And I didn't know what to do. So I was just standing there like, coach, I need the ball. Coach, I need the ball. And then he bounced it. And all the students are on the floor already. So I'm like looking up and I'm like, I can't get wrecked. I'm not going to jump up. And then the other kid with the sprained ankle ran up and grabbed it out of the air before all the students got there. So we got it, and we were all hyped up. He was holding on to the ball, and we're like jumping up and down with everyone, and I'm just more happy that I didn't lose
you
the ball.
You didn't lose the ball.
We got the ball.
That's incredible.
You said it was known like an hour before that you guys were going to the fans were going to rush the court. So like it was talked within the team, like what's going to happen if the fans rush?
No, we didn't want to look too far ahead, like saying we're going to win.
But there wasn't anything like safety stuff, like if –
We had talked for like 2 weeks before as managers. I didn't talk to many of the players about like what would happen because same thing. I didn't want to say like when we win and then like them be all like, oh, you're jinxing something like that. Just trying like
you're just trying to stay out of you're trying to stay in your lane.
We were just talking like what are we gonna do, and it was all just like embrace the experience. Like we hadn't rushed the floor since I think we Des Wells that team beat
Duke.
Wisconsin.
Oh no, was it Wisconsin? Yeah, or was it Duke that year.
It was Wisconsin. Okay. Duke was with Alex Lund.
We probably shouldn't have rushed when we beat Wisconsin because we were ranked pretty high. But it was just like we beat Wisconsin.
Screw it, let's do it. Yeah.
That's been my thing the whole year. I don't think we'll have another rush.
That's what he's been saying.
And I don't think we'll have another rush in our time at Maryland because I think we'll be ranked too high. What are your thoughts on that?
That's what we were saying is when Willard came in, we were projected to be 10th in the Big Ten, and we had a shot to finish first in the last week. So we kind of thought like, We're gonna be so good under his coaching staff. He's getting even better recruits. Like we're gonna get better and better. Like we have to embrace this while we can. And for the senior managers, they had a rough go of it. They had the Danny Manning team that was gross. Yeah, it was gross. And then they had the COVID year and all that stuff. So they were like, I don't care if they tell us like you're not allowed to rush. Like I'm being involved.
It's like, you know what I mean? That's like a once in a lifetime chance.
Yeah.
That's already like a core memory I have from Maryland.
I mean, what's the locker room like after that game?
So usually only like 3 or 4 managers are allowed in the locker room. We had an experience of a guy opening a door in a Willard post game talk, and he wasn't very happy about the sound. He kicked out most of the managers.
Like, were people like dancing or what was he?
Well, this
mad?
Was like earlier in the year, like he's just like, why are there so many people in here? Like,
right.
So we were like, all right, we're gonna stay out of the locker room post game. But when we beat Purdue, he like called
Willard.
Us all in. Yeah,
that's
he
awesome.
Like called us all in. Like, so he's like, no shot. We were all like, no shot. We're not gonna be in there anyway. Like, if he says no, we're still just gonna walk in.
Right.
And it was electric. They covered him with the water. Yeah. He's screaming that his class, like, that's what we do. That's what we do. Uh-huh. And there's like Grievous Vasquez was there. Darryl Morcel was there. Like they're giving talks to the team, just firing everyone up. And I think I stayed in the locker room for like 3 hours after the game, just like talking to the guys. And like there's a video of one of the managers dancing.
I saw that.
In the
I saw
room.
That. Yeah. Is that your boy or
yeah,
like?
Yeah,
that's awesome.
My boy. So it was just like, it was like a high that like I'll never forget.
Right.
Like even when I went home to my dorm, I was like, we just beat Purdue.
Yeah.
I was like, that was sick.
Yeah. So that's like, I have a buddy who's a manager at UMich, and he says that like it's super rewarding, but the amount of time it takes, like people don't realize the like time management and like how much commitment it really takes to be a manager. Like he was saying, it's basically a part-time, full-time job that he has to work. What has your experience with that been like in terms of how much you're working? Like, give us people the knowledge of what you really, you know, what you're dedicating yourself to.
Yeah, so I'm there every day. We'll have off days where like no one has to come in, and then we'll have some days where players won't come in, but we'll come in to help the coaches if they need anything. But for the most part, I'm there every day. Usually about like 4 or 5 hours, sometimes more depending on the day. And then game days, you're there 7 hours before tip-off and probably 3 hours.
7 hours?
Yeah.
Wow.
So what happens if it's a noon game? You're there 5 a.m?
Well, noon games are a little different. We'll do the shoot around the night before.
Oh, so you'll help.
So
them.
Yeah,
gotcha.
So I'll be there the night before instead. But like the 9 o'clock games, we'd get there. Well, the players get there 7 hours early. We'll get there 8. So I'll get there at 1, and we'll set up shoot around. We'll go through shoot around, help with pregame meal, help with pregame warm ups, like everything that we need to do set up the game, make sure it runs smoothly.
Right. That's pretty incredible.
Wow, I didn't realize that's how early players got to games.
Yeah, so they'll do a walkthrough shoot around thing before, but then they have a pregame meal, but then they get to go back to their apartments. They all live in the View, which is right next to Xfinity Center. So they'll walk back to their apartments, but we'll hang out, clean up the meal. We'll usually play a little pickup while we wait for them to come back,
right. Get
our shots up.
Yeah, of course. In case Willard ever needs you, you know what I mean?
Always gotta stay ready.
What's your relationship like with the coaches? Like, take me through, like, the people that you interact with as your higher-ups. What's each relationship like as you climb that ladder?
So we have a pretty good connection with the GA. It's weird because that's a shifting position. We don't know what his role will be next year, if he'll still be around, but we're all really close with him. And then the film guy and the, I don't know what his technical name is. He works in the office at the front desk. His name is Chris. He was a manager when he was a student here. So we interact with them like just like other managers. They're not doing the same tasks as us, but like they know what we're doing. So we're just like friends with them. And then we all have good connections. Everyone has connections with different coaches. Like they get to know you individually. So I, like I said, I have a good connection with Greg Manning, the Dobo. And then a couple of the other guys were really, really close with the big man coach, Grant Billmeyer. So him leaving, that hurt the manager crew as a whole, but we're glad to see him moving up. And then Willard has an assistant that we're really close with too. His name's Chuck. He likes to play pickup with us, run with us, and then we'll have manager games that sometime him and the film guy will jump in and play with us. So
do you ever have to step in on scout team, or is that a whole separate entity?
So we had five guys for scout this past season, but I think it'll look a little different. I'm not sure, but occasionally a coach wants to run through plays before practice starts and he can't get the scout guys out in time. So he'll just grab five managers and we'll just like walk through plays so that he can see them and make sure he's explaining to the players what they're going to see in the game.
Gotcha.
Talked about the relationships with the current team. What about the future team? What is it like bringing recruits, and what's your role in that?
So I had the main role I had with recruits was during the football season when they'd come up for games. I would be on cart duty. So I'd take the little golf cart and I would drive it to drive them to the stadium or the tailgate, depending on what time the game was. Hang around either outside or inside the stadium with them, be ready to drive them back to the hotel, back to the stadium, like just whatever they need. So specifically Jonathan Lamont, who played in my division for high school basketball. So I like know him a little bit. Like we talked about I hold a little grudge because we should have won that game. Ref was not very good and they were pretty good at the time and we weren't. So
I mean, they had him, so.
Yeah. He torched us for like 30, I'm pretty sure. So, I talked to him for a while, just like hung out in the game with them, and then drove him back to his car. And I was just like hanging out with him. Like it's less like official relationship and more like I'm going to show you the people you're going to be working with. Like that they're not like, I'm not going to be scared of the kid, because then he's going to be like, why is this kid that I'm going to be with every day like acting like I'm superior to him? So right. We just try and stay as friendly and ready to do
it. They're just guys at the end
him.
Of the day. Like exactly, it's like, yeah. they're just dudes. Like you ever interact with a player like on campus, like, you know, like anytime like you see a player out or something like that, like the idea of like being too scared to be like, hey, what's up, man? Like, how you doing? Or like just like striking a casual conversation instead of pulling your phone out and picturing them. Like that's like, I feel like that's something more people need to realize. At the end of the day, they're just dudes. You know what I mean?
And I'll say they love it when you go up and you're like, oh my God, Jameer, good game yesterday or whatever.
Like, right. Like that's why you're on campus. Yeah. You know what I mean? Why else would you be going out or like doing stuff, you know, with students?
Exactly.
With NARPs, as they as they tend to say. But kind of wrapping up here, we usually do a top five, like a rapid speed fire. So I ask you, there's two versions. We got the rapid speed fire and then the top five. So first we'll start with the rapid. I'm just going to ask you various questions fast in a row. You just got to say the first thing that comes to your mind. It's not like a long form answer. Okay. What I mean, all right. So you ready? All right. Best hooping shoe.
KD Texas. Ooh. I don't remember. I think they're the 13s.
Yeah. Okay. Best interaction with a opposing player or coach that you've had.
Against Purdue. I can't remember his name. The backup point guard spilled his water and he came, put his arm around me and was like, I'm so sorry. Can you mop this up for me? And he was like really nice about it. So
what a G. Wow. What's the player that you believe is the funniest on the team?
Dante Scott.
Saw him hooping at Epley the other day. Kind of knew he was coming back.
Yeah, I actually played with him.
So yeah, same. That's Epley. So funny.
I got some runs in with him.
That's so funny. Who is the best practice player that like doesn't really do much in the game?
Jahari Long.
Oh, Jahari Long.
He'll put up like 35 assists in a practice casual.
Wow. Best move or like dunk you've seen in practice? Take me through that.
Ian Martinez, I can't even name. He can do any dunk you can name. I can't
For
give
real?
You a specific
yeah,
one.
Yeah, he do be going crazy in the pregame.
Yeah, he'll go like 360 through the legs like, and then just walk out the gym.
Yeah.
What was the craziest play in general you've seen like in a scrimmage at practice?
I would say it was during the game. It was – Hakeem had the snatch back, drop the kid, and then no look pass. Yeah, Juju
that was
dunk.
That was tough.
Or what's it might have the been Dante?
Yeah, I remember that play. Yeah. That was tough. What's the most serious, like film heavy, just like constantly in the gym player on the team?
Jameer, he spends so much time in the gym.
For real,
there's nothing like getting a text from him and like the night before at like 9 and is like, hey, I'm getting shots up at 7. Can you come rebound for me?
How soon did you know he was coming back?
I knew as soon as you guys knew. I was away, so I wasn't around the stadium much, so I wasn't talking to coaches right. or other managers or players. So I was just refreshing Twitter every 5 minutes trying to figure it out.
Best Kevin Willard interaction?
Over Christmas break, I got scratched by my dog, who's in like a 100-pound golden retriever puppy, and I had a big cut on my eye, and it led to a black eye. But he walked up to me and was like, hey, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. He's like, what happened to your eye? And I just said, I got scratched by a dog. I didn't want to explain to him that it was like, I was like smacking at my dog and he scratched me. Yeah. And he was like, you got to take care of yourself, man. Like if you ever need anything, what like genuinely concerned. And I was like, wow, you're a great guy. But I was just playing with my puppy.
Yeah. What is the most scared or like, whoa moment you've like been like, oh boy, I'm about to mess this up, other than the ball story with Purdue as a manager?
The first one that comes to mind is pre-practice, some of the bigs will work out. So I was helping with the assistant coach, Grant Billmeyer. And I just had to shoot, and they had to get rebounds. And I go up the first one, and I swish it. And he, like, looks at me and laughs. He's like, hey, all right, try to miss. Like, they need to work on, like, getting the rebound. So then I shoot the next one, complete air ball. Like, so short. And he's like, all right, man, like, focus up. And then I make the next one again. And that time Willard walks in and he's like, oh, nice stroke on the big guy. And I like started laughing. I was like, all right, I really need to miss this one. And I just completely airballed it again. And I
got kicked out of the drill. They stopped it?
They kicked me out of the drill and put a different guy there.
They're like, you're too good, man. Hey, if you're going to do it, that's the way to do it. And then last question, who's the best player to hang out with, go out with, that type of thing?
I'm really close with Jahari. I always talk to him, just hoops in general. But then he grad transferred Patamelian's, the nicest kid you'll ever meet. He'll talk to you for hours. He'll hang out at the stadium for no reason, just to hang out. Chill. So
that's sweet. Western Michigan guy.
Yeah.
Shout out saw Jahari Michigan. Walking around. We were doing our journalism assignment. We saw him walking around. He said hi to him.
Yeah. He's definitely my guy. I don't talk hoops with a lot of the guys like NBA because they're all focused in season on their stuff. But
Jahari locks into NBA.
He's a big NBA guy.
He seems like an underrated guy. Like I like his game.
Just quick thing. You know like Rock and Roll Part 2, like the Hey You Suck? Do players like that?
Love it.
Okay.
There's not the players like you'll see it in the interviews, especially this year because we didn't lose a home game. But
absolutely,
they appreciate the
they
fans.
They did.
It needs a Big Ten home game.
We don't future talk about Big Ten.
That. UCLA might that might be a Big Ten home game. I don't know.
Shout out Brendan's Twitter.
They talk all the time how much they appreciate and love the fans. So when like. It doesn't matter what you're doing. If it gets you riled up, they're happy. Yeah. And when they hear that, they're like, all right, we know they're about to get loud. Like, help us get a little momentum to finish out these games.
Dude, last one before we go to our top five. Do you have a bench celebration that you guys do, like, for a three? Like
we
a
don't have
ball?
A coordinated celebration.
Oh, you
got to
set that up.
We're a big boom. It's a big practice thing. If you hit, like, three or four in a row, your last one goes in. Everyone yells, screams boom. So we'll do that, and then I always go to the three in the air, little J.R. Smith.
I'm a like a mellow then too. So then that's pretty interesting. You guys got a like the Jay Wright. Have you seen the boom? Like as in the Natty, they win it. So
yeah,
that's pretty tough. But anyway, thank you so much for answering all those.
That
super,
was awesome.
Super interesting. But that kind of wraps up our basketball questions. And this week, it's some of our guests' favorite segment.
Okay, we're gonna get going on the draft here. We got a mammal. But it's like it's animal week here. Mike, explain the draft.
All right, so this week's draft is animals. So you get one mammal, one bird, one reptile, one insect, and one fish.
Now the premise is
what a crazy.
We're in the Xfinity Center, and it's all of our teams competing against each other.
I'm sorry, PETA, but they will be fighting each other.
And there is a pool of water for some reason in the Xfinity Center for the fish.
For the fish, so that will be a water fight. Mm-hmm. So. As customary, our guest will be selecting first. Ty,
we'll
get the 1-1.
Ty, Mike, myself, Sam.
Yep. So, Ty, you get the 1-1. Take us away.
So, I'm a little underprepared, so I'm going to take the mosquito because it's the only thing I've written down in the insect
that's
category.
Good. Okay, that's a good pick.
Hopefully, they're carrying some sort of disease.
Yeah.
I mean, disease is the way to win.
Right, no kidding.
For my mammal, I think I think mammal's the most important category, so I'm going to take a lion. I think
a
lion is an apex predator, whatever it is.
I don't know about that one. I'd rather have a tiger than a lion, personally. Really? Yeah, I don't know. That's just what I would go with, but I respect that pick. B?
I'm going to go insect. I'm going to go bee. You get a big bee sting.
Are you going
no
with
fun.
Like the wasp?
What?
Just going bee.
Wow. That's...
There are so many more deadly insects.
That's a wild
play. That's what I pick, so.
Okay. I will be selecting. Everybody was talking smack, but I will be taking with my reptile, the Komodo dragon. That one is it's a poisonous man, and you don't want to get that thing in an arena.
That's like a fifth round draft pick right there, bro.
Buddy, here.
Massive reach on the Komodo dragon. Massive reach.
All right. And then for my next pick, Mike might hate this too, but I'm going to go with the fish, and I'm going to get the great white. It's just a killer animal. Like, in a fight, that thing's winning a lot of fights. It might be a little mellow, but I'm taking that. So great white shark, that puts shark off the board.
Okay. I am going to go – I'm underprepared for this draft. I'm a little embarrassed here. For a bird, I'm going to go owl.
to let you know, Ty, the premise of this, Brendan picks the most niche things ever. We did a Maryland, like, all-time basketball draft. His starting shooting guard was Noah Batchelor because it's just, like, that's his thing.
Noah's the
like,
– I mean, he's
– like, it hits his bit. He loves bits. So
Noah's
him taking
a great player, but –
Him taking Still. An owl yeah. at second overall, that fits the category. All right, Mike.
Well, Sam, you might have the great white shark, but I have a saltwater crocodile. It's the largest Ooh. Reptile in the world and has the strongest bite of any reptile.
Okay, good pick. Yeah. Ty?
I'm going to go to bird. I'm going to take the bald eagle. Just
good pick. I was going to pick that, but I thought owl was funnier, so.
Yeah, that's a good pick.
Eagle's a great pick. And then I'm going to go to mammal, and I'm just going to grab the brown bear.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, really good. Really, very strong.
Going to take it off the board.
Time might win this. Time may win this.
It's a solid pick. That's a solid pick, Ty. All right, Mike.
I'm going to take this bird called the southern cassowary. It weighs in 200 pounds and can stand a full 6 feet tall.
So I hate to break it to you, but that thing isn't getting in the air.
It's a heavyweight fighter.
It is. It's a heavyweight fighter. All right, B, what's your pick?
Mammal. I'm going to go with the Bacterian camel. If you look up a picture of this thing, it's like crazy.
I'm telling you, this is his niche.
If you look up a picture of this, I mean, I wouldn't want to fight that. So I'm getting that out of there. So
yeah. All right, I'm going to get my bird off the board, and it's not 240 pounds. It's actually the opposite. It is a fast bird. I'm going the Peregrine Falcon.
All right, let's slow down. I got the Shaquille O'Neal birds here.
All right. And mine's Trey Young because we're coming down and just swooping in there. Can't sorry, Ty, defense. But you know, it's a sore spot for a Heat fan. But anyway, with my next pick, I'm gonna get my mammal off the board, and I'm gonna go with a hippo. Hippos are some of the most deadly animal. They're nearly impossible to kill with their skin, big teeth. Good pick.
That was actually a pretty good pick.
Not actually
fish.
It was
fish. Blobfish.
There it is. Another one. I mean, this guy, he just, and somehow he wins sometimes. People love the little bit thing. It's Brendan the Bit. Mike, I don't even want to give justification to that.
Look at this guy. It's indestructible. Blobfish.
Not a visual podcast.
I know. Fair. All right. Okay, go on. Come on.
I'm going to take the Indian red scorpion. Up to 40% of stung victims die. So
wow.
This is a pretty deadly insect.
Yeah, no kidding.
Ty? To round mine out, fish, I'm going to go swordfish. Mm. Hope it treats it like a boxer, keep its distance. And then reptile, I'm going to go with the cobra.
Okay,
nice. That's a very solid. They're going to play well to the audience. They're going to like
really
that.
Will be.
I'm going to take a lionfish for my last pick.
Okay. I don't hate it. B?
I have a reptile, I believe. I'm going to go with the world's smallest reptile because if you're trying to, you know, can't find it, you can't kill it. Brooksnia nana. So
what?
That's my
what is what? That?
It's like 13 millimeters long. It's
Are
very
you
small.
Kidding
it's in Madagascar.
This is crazy.
I'll take the male version, thanks.
Alright. I will be wrapping up my draft with a pretty cool looking insect. I'm gonna get myself the praying mantis to wrap it up. So
yeah,
that was
but
our
this is a fight. Like you Brendan, your team is out in the first round. I don't even care.
All right, so that was our draft.
Brooksnia nana is about to do crazy things.
Top five animals. Ty, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate you talking with us, and Make sure you check out the episode, plug it, plug all your socials, that type of thing. If anyone wants to follow, and tell us what it's going to what's gonna look like next year for the basketball team.
Thank you guys so much for having me again. This was a great experience. I'll say check out the Maryland men's basketball Twitter. Definitely reach out if you're interested in applying. We're open to anybody. Mm-hmm. We really need some new guys. We have a lot of seniors leaving, so we're in the application process right now.
Recruiting phase.
Yeah. Putting on my recruiting hat. and next year, expecting big things. Love the guys coming in. Keeping Dante's huge. Juju's going to develop even more than he already did. So I have big expectations and a powerful Big Ten conference again next year. I think we'll finish similar to where we did this year, top five.
Well, Ty.
Awesome.
Obviously, Terp fans would love to see that too. So thank you for coming on.
Ty Hepting has just exited the studio, so it's time for us to do a little recap of Maryland sports and then a little preview of Maryland sports before we get out of here. But before we do that, what an interview.
Ty, great guy.
That might have been one of our best.
Some of the stories, the story about the ball then the mop, that's just an incredible, incredible thing. And hearing about the players behind the court and what we know was really cool. So we appreciate Ty for coming on. And basketball is always at the back of our minds. But they are obviously in the off season, and we got some spring sports ramping into season.
Brendan? Just before you do that, I would like to make it very clear that I predict that Dante Scott will return, and he returned.
Brendan, what do we know about the women's lax team? They've started out continue to be extremely hot, playing well, has still not lost a home game under Kathy Reese. Take us through what they did this past weekend.
It is very difficult to contain something that is very hot and moving very quick, and that's exactly what happened. Johns Hopkins came into College Park, had Maryland on their back of their on their heels is the word I was looking for, but Maryland responded, took the win 13-12, scored a late goal. They've just been absolutely dominating. I mean, you look at the Ohio State game, 18-7. I mean, just a crazy, just a dominant win in the Big Ten. Eloise Clevenger sets the single game assist record with 8 assists.
Crazy.
This team, I've been talking to other people who've been covering them. I don't know if they're going to lose, but if they are, it's going to be one of the next two games because number 18 ranked Penn State away on Thursday. Week after that, on April 22nd, second ranked Northwestern. Those are two huge tests. They haven't played a team that highly ranked the entire year. Early of the year, they played some very strong teams, but these will be two great tests to see where Maryland is going to be. Big Ten championship for the NCAA championship. But like I said, I honestly expect them to win those games if they play how they've been playing.
Really? You think that this is a team that could win the NCAA title? As crazy as that is to say.
I think Final Four would be a Final Four bust for sure. I mean, you look at a team that started 3-3 and now 12-3. I mean, it's not really, at the end of the day, it's a team who's the hottest going into those games that's going to win. We just saw with UConn.
What are the biggest teams they've beaten in that stretch?
Princeton, Michigan,
like
Johns Hopkins.
The
top ranked team is 15th, like Michigan.
So they really haven't had the comp against the elite teams, right?
Yes, they have not played any top 10 teams, but they've. It's more about how they've played and that they've.
You
cleaned,
think they're? Just
it's
really
more
cooking.
That they. I think that they've cleaned up with their mistakes from the beginning of the year.
So they're obviously playing some of their best hockey, and with such little left of the season ahead, this is kind of the time you want to be rounding into form, and they certainly seem to be doing that. But their counterpart in terms of gender is not necessarily doing that. They did have a big win over the weekend, but the men's lacrosse team continues to not be as dominant as I think a lot of people thought they would be heading into the year, especially coming off the undefeated national title run a year prior. This team, they're good, but they're not best in the country good, it seems. Brendan, what have you seen from the Hardshell boys?
I mean, the thing is, you say oh, not incredible, whatever. I mean, fifth in the country. They're still fifth in the country.
I mean, they're clearly a top five program.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get into that.
The thing is that we're comparing it to their dominance last year.
That's part
of the issue, but I think that's a fair comparison. You know what I mean?
I mean, they still took down the number one team in the country. Obviously not as strong as last year. They lost so many pieces. Next two games, Rutgers and Johns Hopkins. Two huge games. Maryland wins those games. I mean, they are basically slated to probably then win the Big Ten tournament. The only Big Ten loss is Michigan, which is weird game. I mean, you go from beating the ninth ranked Penn State Nittany Lions and the week before beating best team in the country, Virginia. It's at the time, it's like they're still extremely strong. And very possible they could win a national championship.
Yeah, I think this
everything has to go right for them now.
That's the problem, is that this team is basically in the spot where if they don't win a natty, it's a bust of a season. So yeah. When you have those expectations, it makes it difficult.
It seems like the season kind of got off to a rocky start, and that kind of contributes to the struggles. When you have your preseason all Big Ten, preseason second team All-American goalie go down, that kind of shakes up your roster. When you look at the numbers of the other goalies they have, they're both allowing over 10 goals a game. Like, that's something that's hard to get over.
Definitely.
You guys see the end of the game?
That Ohio State, I wanted to ask that about the gloves. What did you think of that?
I mean, I think that those are the rules, right? It's a little bit ticky-tack to go, oh, check the gloves.
But swore that he didn't say that. I think that that might be just a, I think he said he suggested that, hey, why don't you check that out? That sounds the same to me
For those of you who are listening who don't know what happened, the game was tied. Maryland was behind the whole game against Ohio State. Game gets
they were
close
down,
to the
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, they were down.
Yeah.
Tied up at 11-11, and there's a glove check that happens, and the rule is that all players on the team need to have uniform gloves. And the person in the face-off circle for Ohio State didn't fit that and got a penalty. Both teams still had possessions after that. The game ended up going to overtime. Maryland won in overtime, but it did upset a lot of Ohio State fans, rightfully so, because it's something you don't see very often.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's in the rule book. You should follow the rules no matter what. It's illegal, so you can't do it.
Mike, what do you think?
It's illegal. You can't do it. It's pretty straightforward.
Asking for the refs to look at it is a little ticky-tacky. It's not that it just happened on its own.
Most definitely petty, yeah, but at the same time.
But if you put it in different terms, it's like it's not like it was a ref did something that's like up for interpretation. It's not like a ref called a technical foul. A technical foul is a completely up to interpretation thing.
Subjective call.
It is a subjective call. This is something, it's black and white. Either the gloves all look the same or the gloves don't. The gloves don't look the same. Penalty.
I think that it's in Tillman's right. I do think it's a little petty, as Mike put it. And I think that's just, it's up to personal opinion.
Like, if you're up by a gazillion, I don't think
he's calling
that is
that.
Happening.
That's not absolutely no shot. So. But they obviously came through with a clutch win. Brendan and us will, it's just an interesting take from all of us. But they're clearly got some stuff to figure out. And for a team that was so highly ranked in the preseason to now kind of be, you know, still ranked high, but figuring out some things. That's something that extends to multiple Maryland sports. The Terps baseball team, the Dirty Terps, just lost. We're recording on Tuesday night. They fell to Georgetown in extra innings, made a big comeback, but weren't able to pull it out. Mike, this team, they take some from Iowa, and then they get smoked against Rutgers in the series finale. It seems like they're kind of riding the roller coaster. What have you seen from this squad?
It's just about never being able to play cohesively, all having it click all at once. You have games where, you know, the offense is productive. Like tonight, they scored 10 runs. And then you got other games where it's that same game, but the pitching gives up 11. And it's like they've never found a way to mesh it all together at once. This weekend, they're playing against Ohio State. They're 16-5. Tonight, they beat Akron 15-1, so they can threaten you on offense. This is a series where you want to go 3-1, 4-0. You don't want to go, this is a week. You want to go 3-1, 4-0, which means you want to sweep Ohio State, because that would be for the past 2 weeks you go 2-2. Like, it was great they beat Iowa the other week, but they also lost a midweek game before, and they also lost a Sunday game. So they went 2-2 that week in reality. You gotta dominate these weeks and show you can dominate an entire weekend. Because what happened last year in the NCAA regionals is, you know, the pitching staff, they got tired, you know. Team kind of got worn down over the last, you know, long stretch of games, and they couldn't, you know, dominate all at once.
Yeah, I think that that's something that's super interesting in terms of the how they're kind of – it seems like they're almost on and off. Like, if the hitting's on, the pitching is, you know, really off. And if the pitching's pitching well, the hitters aren't really able to do much damage. But
the relief pitching has to be a lot better.
That's what I was going to ask you next. What are you seeing from this team? What are some weaknesses that make you think, first of all, do you think they can make that regional push? And what would be the thing that would hold them back?
The thing, I bring up the relief pitching. I mean, tonight as an example, Kenny Lippman comes in. He throws a great first inning, I believe, once he came in relief. Next innings, he's giving up homers. Then you have Tommy Cain come in First inning, again, he looks great. But then, you know, that second inning, that third inning is when these guys start to struggle. And while, yeah, we have a lot of, you know, they have a lot of great arms in the bullpen, you can't only be good for one inning. You have to stretch it out. David Falco Jr. is one arm in the bullpen who has not lived up to how he played last season. He was viewed as the top bullpen arm, not the starter, but just top bullpen arm entering the season. And he has a sub-5, he has an above-5 ERA. Like, you just cannot have that in this bullpen. And that, in my opinion, is the key to success. Because you look at the starting pitchers, Jason Savakul, Nick Dean, Kyle McCoy now, they can all throw. But then when the relief pitchers come in, it's where they struggle.
Yeah, I definitely think that that's something you got to figure out, because bullpens and postseason play mean so much, and they're really starting to have to rely on them. But there's another team brought in not really relying on when you're looking at the bullpen, and that is the team that I cover, the softball team.
What's going on there, Sam?
Yeah, just fell in 2 out of 3 to Nebraska at home. This team, guys, they're really just kind of they're mediocre. That's what I've been seeing from them. Every time it looks like they're turning a corner, they lose a couple. Every time it looks like, you know, they're really going to fall off the face of the cliff, they win a couple games to break your belief back. So I think that that's
tough to be a fan of that type of team, huh?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm not a fan, so I wouldn't.
No, I know what I'm saying. Speaking for, yeah.
Right, like that type of thing. You could see it when you're looking at a team that you just know is maddeningly frustrating. But they continue to fight in the Big Ten. They're off to the best program start in a long time. So that's something that you got to look at as a positive, and they'll have a chance to extend that program victories this weekend. They take on Iowa.
I just want to ask a question to both of you. About a month left in the season for baseball and softball. What do you think the peak is? If everything goes right for both of these teams, how far can they get? Mike, you can take it away.
I mean, a Big Ten championship is still in reach, I believe. Like, they have all the pieces for it. It just, again, it depends on if they can all click at once.
Yeah, I would say that I agree with Mike for the baseball, but on the softball side, I don't think it's there. When you look at this team, they're still 4-7 in Big Ten play. Making the college softball playoff is very tough. So that's probably out of the realm of possibility. I mean, when you got 64 teams that make it, the Big Ten usually only puts in 3 teams, and Maryland isn't really in that level. So I would say that might be tough. But best outcome, maybe they get to that point. I think more realistic is they set the program record in wins in like the past 5 years.
And that'd be great.
Yeah, for the past 5 years, program record in wins. And then you really just want to end the season on a strong note.
Where are they right now in terms of standings?
In terms of the Big Ten?
Yeah, Big Ten standings. Yeah. I would say that they I'd have to look at it, but I know that they're like towards the bottom. I think 8th or 9th. Brennan might have it pulled up here, but that's what I would guess, 4-7.
They're 5th to last.
So that would be, how many teams is that?
The 10th?
10th, okay, so 10th. That's a long climb they got to make to get to the top of the ladder, so I wouldn't expect a pro season bid.
Maryland is the 5 right now in the Big Baseball, 10, yeah. And the 5 seed did win the Big Ten tournament last year. Just want to put that out.
Okay.
So it's...
They won it all last year.
It's in the realm of probability.
Yeah, so we'll see how it goes. But that's baseball. That's our spring sports session. Very interesting current time in Maryland sports. Lastly, just want to make a quick couple of updates in case anybody didn't hear. Donta Scott is returning for his final season at Maryland.
Hunter Dickinson taking a visit this weekend at Maryland.
Yeah, according to sources, Hunter Dickinson visiting here at Maryland. And then the update from the football team is that the spring game's coming up in a couple weeks. That'll be interesting to watch. Deontay Banks, Ja'Corian Bennett, nearly about to be drafted. And so, yeah, that wraps up all the quick updates. And so that's our current time in Maryland sports. But it's our favorite segment, the one and only investigative journalism, Brennan Wiesel, Terrific Terp. Who do we got this week, B?
All right, let's do it. Let's take it back a little bit. If you've ever had a chance to walk into Cold Fieldhouse or Ridgid Coliseum, at Maryland, there's a good chance you've seen this Terrific Terp on the wall. You probably don't know their name. If you look around one of these venues long enough, you'll come across a picture of a boxing ring in the center of Ridgid Coliseum. The University of Maryland boxing team was big. Actually, bigger than the basketball team. The team only lasted from 1930 to 1955, but they were so popular that their games would often be featured in doubleheaders to attract fans to go to the basketball games.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
This week's Trivic Turp goes to two brothers who headlined the boxing team, Benny and Hotze Alperstein. Alperstein? That's right.
Jewish.
The boys were Orthodox Jews who grew up in a neighborhood in southwest Baltimore. They grew up in a family with seven other children. Total, there were eight boys and just one girl.
The Alperstein's putting on for my religion. I respect it.
Benny joined the team first. He would have been the first ever individual national champion at the University of Maryland and national champion in general if it weren't for Irene Knox.
It's all full circle.
1932's greatest sharpshooter, who, if you don't recall, over a 50-foot range, she hit a circle 15/100ths of an inch diameter 59 out of 60 times. So not too bad to be in the same conversation with her.
Nope, not at all.
Benny won the NCAA Boxing National Championship in 1937 and 1938. He also served on the Air Force in World War II, attaining the rank of major. Best of all, he lived to be 102 years old. His brother, Hotze, joined the team because of Benny's success. When Benny was graduating, he told Gary Epley about his brother. Epley took his word for it, and despite never having been in a boxing ring, Hotze got a scholarship. So he'd boxed before, he fought, just never in a ring. It all worked out. During his 4 years at Maryland, Hotze went undefeated in all his bouts, and he was a captain of the team for 3 years, finalist in the 1941 Southern Conference, and led his team to the 1942 Eastern Intercollegiate Championship. Also served in World War II. Two just incredible guys from the boxing program. Boxing program, really not talked about enough in Maryland.
That's incredible. That's they were both inducted into the Hall of Fames too, right?
The Maryland Athletics Hall of Fame and the Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. Hotze lived to be 98. Altogether, the Alperstein brothers saw 200 years of life. While Maryland may no longer have a boxing team, the legacy of the Alperstein brothers lives on. Ladies and gentlemen, Benny and Hotze.
Give it up for B. Winston.
He did it again. Another great Terrific Terp. Another great episode. Listen on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, all the social medias at Under the Shell. Again, that is look up Terrapin Sports Central. We are right there on all your Apple podcasts, Spotify, wherever you may listen on the way to work or the way home or whatever.
Give it a vote. Give it a vote on the Twitter. Come
on,
guys.
Give it a vote as well. We love hearing feedback on the draft, and we love you guys listening, so continue to do that. But again, for Mike, Brendan, and Sam, have a good night, have a good week, and enjoy the lovely weather, folks. Peace.